Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday and happy Sunday, wherever you may be in the USA or around the globe. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. And this is the week after New Year's, so we're going to have a little fun, kind of, in this show. Our historical story is going to be about a prophet who lived back in the 1500s and who prophesied all sorts of world events leading up to and including the year 2022 and beyond. We'll tell you more here in just a moment. That's the historical story. And then I want to spend just a little bit of time on Harry Reid. You know, he died late last year, in fact, December. And he was quite the political corruption machine. And much of what we are contending with today in the Senate, with talk about the filibuster and nuclear options and reconciliation, goes back to him. But he has a sordid past in addition to that. And you need to know, because he is indicative of the political class. So, that'll be a little bit of something. We're going to talk about, since I didn't get to it last week, we're going to give you the base, kind of the foundations, just the very foundation of this BlackRock Vanguard, very scary global control thing going on. When you kind of get the facts and the figures and you understand the interplay of these two monster entities with China, democratic Marxists, the globalists, you'll begin to see where I'm going to go with this rather long series of segments, probably over 3, 4, 5 weeks. I got some great letters from listeners, and some of them asked me to expound on a few more future prognostications. For those of you who missed it, last week was the New Year's show. It's kind of an annual tradition. I grade myself on my prognostications for the previous year, and I give you my forecast for the upcoming year, in this case, 2022. By popular demand and a bunch of emails, we're going to add a little bit to that prognostication list. The split of the United States, is that possible? The balkanization of the United States? How about real estate? What's the forecast for real estate for 2022? Your house, your land? We're going to go into that. We're going to talk just a little bit about COVID, because I think by now you folks kind of get what's going on. I mean, I'm going to bring you updated facts and figures, but we know the scoop. We know the score. We know that we have been lied to every step of the way about a virus that was created using your taxpayer money in concert with the Red Chinese Army in the Wuhan lab. And then that was lied about until the emails came out a few months ago. And now we know that the vaccine, everything to do with the vaccine, everything to do with COVID, in fact, is one big fat lie. The question is, why? Why the big continuing, ever convoluting, ever changing, ever morphing lies? So I'm going to bring you some facts and figures in addition to the many studies I've brought you on exactly how many folks who've gotten 2 jabs and all 3 jabs and who are unfortunately planning to get the 4th jab. How many of those folks are getting sick versus the unvaccinated? And of course, unvaccinated is a misnomer because it's not a vaccine. We're going to spend a little bit of time on that. And then we're going to have a really, really, really big rat-a-tat-tat. We have a bunch of catch-up to do. There's a bunch of stuff, obviously, that has happened in the last week. And we have just run out of time in the last 3 or 4 shows to get you a full dose of Reed's rat-a-tat-tat. But this show, you will have a full dose for sure. So let's get started. Okay, so probably a number of you figured out who I was talking about. It's Nostradamus. He was a French philosopher. He wrote, believe it or not, 6,338 prophecies. He suggested when, where, how the world will end. He's predicted a number of chilling events, including for 2022, which will be next week's, or part of next week's, historical story. But let me get you up to 2022 to give you some foundation to this Nostradamus character. So he died centuries ago, July 2nd, 1566, and his predictions seem to have been eerily correct. His full name was Michael de Nostradamus, and he was born on the 21st of December, 1503. He was a French apothecary, as they called him back then. He had a reputation for publishing collections of prophecies, kind of in a quadrant or poetic fashion, which gave them even more mystery and more malleability. He wrote a book called Les Prophéties, which is interpreted as The Prophecies. The first edition appeared in 1555, and most of his predictions are major world events, events, frankly, that we can't deny happened, or that we can't deny believing. So let's start with some of his most famous prophecies, dating way back, about many things, and that's going to lead us up to where we are now, which is going to be next week's historical story. So here's a prediction for you that he made. From the enslaved people, songs, chants, and demands. The princes and lords are held captive in prisons. In the future, such headless idiots. These will be taken as divine utterances. Before the war comes, the Great Wall will fall. The king will be executed. His death coming too soon will be lamented. The guards will swim in blood. Near the river Seine, the soil will be bloodied. That's the French Revolution, folks. The French Revolution started in 1789, ended in 1799, you know, radical social and political upheaval in both French and European history. And of course, the king and and his wife lost their heads in the guillotine. Quite interesting. He kind of nailed that one. And then we have the rise of Napoleon. Here's what he wrote about that. Pas ne Laurent will be more of fire than of the blood. To swim in praise, the great one to flee to the confluence. He will refuse entry to the piouses. The depraved ones and the durants will keep them imprisoned. Well, look, this is one of his most famous prophecies. And basically, he mentioned, you got to remember, this is 200 years before Napoleon was born. He mentions Napoleon's name. Pas ne Laurent is the name that Nostradamus used. And Napoleon Bonaparte's real name was Napoleon Roy. It's pretty uncanny. And he was probably the most famous and infamous emperor of France. When Nostradamus described him, this is what historians theorize, as more of fire than blood, that means that his rise to power was anything but peaceful, and it was anything but peaceful. And Nostradamus uses the word piouses. Well, Popes Pius VI and the VII, who, of course, it's 200 years from when Nostradamus lived, were both imprisoned by Napoleon. Exactly what Nostradamus predicted hundreds of years prior. Let's talk about Louis Pasteur. Okay, Louis Pasteur, by the way, was a French chemist. He was a microbiologist. He lived from the 27th of December, 1822, to the 29th of September, 1895, and he was well known for incredible discoveries, which reduced mortality from certain types of fevers, the first vaccine for rabies, the first vaccine for anthrax. His experiments supported the germ theory of disease. The guy was brilliant, and he was best known, to the general public anyway, for inventing a method to stop milk and wine from causing sickness, and that is called pasteurization. He is thought to be one of the three main founders of today's science of microbiology, and he was honored as a demigod. So let me tell you what Nostradamus said about him. Quote, lost, found, hidden for so long a time, the pastor will be honored as a demigod. Before the moon finishes its full period, he will be dishonored by other winds. How about Adolf Hitler? Let's see what Nostradamus said about him. This is Nostradamus' prediction. From the depths of the west of Europe, a young child will be born of poor people. He who by his tongue will seduce a great troop, his fame will increase towards the realm of the east. Beasts ferocious from hunger will swim across rivers. The greater one will cause it to be dragged in an iron cage, when the Germany child will observe nothing. So, let's look at the historical facts. And this is like 400 years after Nostradamus lived. Adolf Hitler was born in Austria. Okay, he was the leader of the National Socialist German Workers Party, a.k.a. the Nazi Party. And he was interpreted by Nostradamus as the Beast. And his army went crossing over to capture France. Okay, he served as the head of state as Führer from 1935 to 1945. And the quatrain of Nostradamus also seems to kind of foreshadow both the Holocaust and the invasion of Russia, i.e. to the east. I mean, pretty uncanny. Then World War II, the overall World War II. Here's what Nostradamus said. The two greatest ones of Asia and Africa, from the Rhine and the lower Danube, they will said to have come. Cries, tears at Malta, and the Ligurian side. Well, this is pretty crystal clear, okay? This is the prediction of World War II, the rise of Hitler, and a global military conflict that basically killed almost 70 million people. 100 million military personnel mobilized to fight in the Second World War. And the participants placed their entire economic, their industrial, their scientific capabilities at the service of the war effort. Malta, of course, was a famous meeting of the Allies, right at the inception of the alliance between Russia and Britain and America. This was after Germany's treacherous invasion of their former allies' lands, i.e. Russia. Let's take a look at the atomic bombs. Listen to this. This is Nostradamus, right? 400 years before. Near the gates and within the cities, there will be two scourges, the likes of which was never seen. Famine within plague, people put out by steel, crying to the great immortal God for relief. The heavenly dart would stretch its course, death in the speaking, a great achievement. The proud nation brought low by the stone in the tree. Rumors of a monstrous human bring purge, then expiation. Well, you know, the two bombs, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, the incredible damage that it wrecked, and the Japanese, Japan being the proud nation, the Japanese suffering from radiation and other sicknesses and deaths for many years following the dropping of those two devices, you know, from the sky, right? I mean, it's pretty astounding. How about the death of John F. and Robert F. Kennedy? Here was his prediction. The great man will be struck down in the day by a thunderbolt, an evil deed foretold by the bearer of a petition. Another falls at nighttime. Conflict at Rheims, London, and a pestilence in Tuscany. Well, you know, Robert F. Kennedy was shot in the evening in a ballroom in a hotel. And, of course, John F. Kennedy was shot in the head and other places by, they say, a single assassin. There's another really interesting part of this prophecy. Let me read it to you. The quatrain of Nostradamus continues with, a dead innocent will be accused of the deed. Folks, Lee Harvey Oswald, right? He was the guy that many people believe was framed by the powers that be who really conducted the assassination. And I've told you in the past, because I'm familiar with these weapons, for Lee Harvey Oswald, who was a mere marksman, which is pretty low grade in the Marines, to be able to hit a moving target at a steep down angle, the most difficult shot to make, with no rest, and to get off three shots in 3 seconds, all of them hitting the target. Wow, it's not believable. It's not believable. Let's talk about inflation and starvation. What did he say about that? Nostradamus predicted inflation and starvation. And he predicted it twice. Once back in the great famines that swept Africa about a century and a half ago. And then the second time, well, that will come next week in next week's historical story. What did Nostradamus say about the death of Princess Diana? Quote, the penultimate of the surname of prophet will take Diana. He actually used her name For his day and rest, he will wander because of a frantic head, and delivering a great people from subjection. This is 500 years before Diana lived. Pretty amazing. And if you remember, on the 31st of August, I think it was 2009, Diana, the Princess of Wales, died in a car collision, which most people figure was caused by a drunken chauffeur speeding. How about 911? Here was the prediction. Volcanic fire from the center of the earth will cause trembling around the new city. Two great rocks will make war for a long time. The Arethusa will redden a new river. In the year 1999, in the seventh month, from the sky will come the great king of terror, bringing back to life the great king of Mongols, before and after Mars to reign by good fortune. The sky will burn at 45 degrees. Fire approaches the great new city. By fire he will destroy their city, a cold and cruel heart. Blood will pour, mercy to none. Think about it. Think about the planes into the two towers. And yes, he might have been 2 years off, but 2 years off, 550 years after this guy lived. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. Fire of London. Here was his prophecy. The blood of the just will commit a fault at London, burnt through lightning of 23 the 6th. The ancient lady will fall from her high place. Several of the same sect will be killed. So this is really interesting, right? 23 the 6th would be as 66. 20 times 3 plus 6. The Great London Fire was in 1666, more than a century after Nostradamus died. You know, Nostradamus's predictions always had kind of ambiguities, and these ambiguities really made it hard to be definitive, which maybe supports and maybe detracts from a particular prophecy. And by the way, the Great Fire was set off by a flame in a bakery, so that you know, in London, not by lightning. And nobody's ever really figured out what the ancient lady signifies. Is it perhaps the city itself of London? Anyway, this is one to puzzle over, even by Nostradamus standards. Now, in response to a number of emails requesting my forecasts, and I'm flattered. I'm glad you think my forecasts are great. On several subjects, let's just add to last week's list of 2022 forecasts. First of all, on real estate. You know, it's very tough to predict real estate, folks, and I know a little bit about it. But real estate can be localized, it can be nationalized, it can be split into various assets, multifamily, single family, raw land, ranch, farm, industrial, commercial, you name it. And each of those various types of real estate can move independently of other types based on external factors. Let me tell you what some of the other folks around the world are saying about real estate in 2022. Okay, obviously, the real estate market for the last 2 years has been ideal if you're selling your home or your property. Not so great if you are a buyer. Okay, so the Realtor.com experts, they've identified several factors that they think will keep pushing demand up. Number one, millennials are in the sweet spot, so to speak, for buying their first home. 45 million millennials. A lot of people. A lot of houses. Hispanics, according to Realtor.com, are a growing and increasingly affluent market, and they make up more than 10% of recent home buyers over the last year, year and a half. Also, the fallout from the pandemic, okay, the scamdemic. Many people are shifting permanently to working from home. They want to sell where they're at. They want to move further from the office. They want to buy somewhere more spacious. They want kind of more space around them. The National Association of Home Builders is making kind of similar forecasts to Realtor.com, but they think demand will moderate slightly as some potential buyers out there just get fed up with a tight supply and give up. Rising interest rates are definitely going to add pressure on sellers. And it's going to deprive the market of pretty large numbers of buyers. I think I told you last week or the week before, a 0.5% rise in mortgage rates knocks about 10 million people out of the market. I mean, that's a big knock. And the Mortgage Bankers Association expects mortgage rates to hit 4%. They're currently around 3 for a 30-year mortgage, 2.6 to 2.8, depending upon the property, for a 15-year mortgage. And the Mortgage Bankers Association thinks that that's going to greatly reduce the market for real estate. Now, Zillow, let's take Zillow because everybody's familiar with them. In September, they predicted that U.S. home prices would rise by 11.7% in 2022. The company has now revised its projections upwards, believe it or not. On November 17th, Zillow said they expect prices to rise by 13.6% in 2022. But lest we get too excited about this, financial analysts Coral Logic, who are pretty good, they think prices will rise by only 1.9%. And the Mortgage Bankers Association, we talked about them previously, expects them to fall by 2.5%. And let's keep in mind that Zillow, who's projecting 13-plus percent rises in the price of homes in 2022, they said at the beginning of the scamdemic that prices would fall. But in the 12 months from that projection of theirs, from August 2020, they rose by 19.9%. So the bottom line is, you got to take all these projections with a grain of salt, and you have to localize the projections. Don't kid yourself about your market. Dispassionately observe and consider what its strengths and its weaknesses are, because they will play into all sorts of buying, selling, and pricing scenarios. One thing is for sure, the blue state refugee exodus, mostly by conservatives, is going to continue. Which means, by the way, that blue states, if there is any downturn in the market, will likely be the first to experience it. Red states, on the other hand, to whom this great outmigration from blue states is headed, would seem to be better insulated than properties in blue states. One of the things which I'm pretty convinced of is that whatever may happen with housing, and listen, the economy and macroeconomics are way bigger than you or I, our buyers or our sellers. If people can't afford it, or if they don't qualify for a loan, they can't buy it. And with interest rates rising, the economy kind of tepid under President Cadaver, i.e., President Obama's third term, it would pay to be careful, both as a buyer and as a seller, I might add. One thing I'm pretty convinced of, but there's no guarantees, is that rural land, rural properties, ranch properties, farm properties are going to hold pretty solid and increase. They ain't making no more land, as Mark Twain said. And I can tell you that in the markets of the Rockies, inventory of ranch property, rural property, acreages, small acreages with a nice home or a home that can be fixed up on it, they're really hard to find. And they're not getting easier to find. They're getting harder to find. So I think that type of property, located in a pretty area, located in a conservative-leaning state that's fiscally responsible, with schools that are not screaming meme left, are going to be pretty solid for the next year or two. So that's kind of a wandering projection for you, because there's a lot of unknowns out there. If a war breaks out in Europe, Russia and the Ukraine, if China invades Taiwan, if some kind of conflict, heaven forbid, erupts between America and Russia or America and China, Iran attacks Israel. I mean, all these things can throw a big monkey wrench into any projections. Once again, the world and macroeconomics is much bigger than you and I and our buyers and our sellers. So use your head. Think about your location. Think about the pros and the cons of where your property is located or where you are buying your property. You might like my book, Land for Love and Money. I'm going to throw in a little plug here. It was named Best Real Estate Book of the Year several years ago. It is as apropos now as then, and the first of three volumes. This first volume is about kind of acquisition and sales, which is kind of timely. You can get it on Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com. You can get it at the publishers, ThreadsWestSeries.com, www.threadswestseries.com. And for those of you who are contemplating buying or selling, I think you'll find it extremely helpful. And it's written anecdotally, so it's kind of fun to read. Absolutely true stories, which are used as instruction. So, for those of you who wish, grab it. I was also asked to talk about the possible split up of the United States. What do I see happening with the current divisions in the United States, particularly between red states and blue states? Kind of ties right into the real estate I was just telling you about. Well, look, folks, the fissures between philosophies and ideologies and certain states, urban areas and rural areas, has existed in America since the beginning of time, since the colonies. You know, in the ratification of the Constitution, there was a give and take between the delegates because there were competing forces, competing ambitions, competing concerns at work. The more rural states, particularly the southern states, wanted to be careful that America could not be dominated. American politics could not be dominated by the more populous, industrialized, and wealthier North. You know, it's very similar to what you see happening right now, right? I mean, if you take a look at red versus blue on a map of the United States, the blue is vastly outnumbered, vastly, like 100-1, by the red colored areas. But those blue areas that pop up here and there are all huge metropolitan complexes with tens upon tens of millions of people. It's the same push-pull as back in 1787. And of course, what happened in 1787 was, despite the best efforts of the framers, eventually those differences became so wide. And of course, you had the mix of slavery, which needed to go away and which was not addressed at the Constitutional Conference because they wanted to get a constitution done and it wasn't going to happen if they addressed it. Even though it was addressed in the Declaration of Independence by Jefferson, all men, not white men, not black men, all men are created equal. He tried. He personally detested slavery. But that led to the Civil War, right? The agricultural South and the industrial North. The big cities versus the rural areas. I mean, this is a theme that is not new to America. What is new to America, and which really started to foment and bubble and percolate and was coaxed to do all those things, was the election of Barack Obama in 2008. Barack Obama is the great divider, quite intentionally, I might add. I mean, it's all part of the Marxist playbook, all part of it. And he is encouraged, and he was supported, in fact, financed by China and Russia, who would love nothing better to see fragmentation in the United States. They're delighted with what's going on right now. It's kind of a balkanization of the United States. I used that word earlier in the show. And when you have balkanization, you have a kind of big landmass that splits off into whole lots of little splinters. And of course, little splinters are much easier to pick up, burn, or trash than a big log, right? Divided we fall, united we stand. So all of this is intentional, this division. And it plays very cleverly because the left is clever. And our global adversaries are clever. And the globalists are clever. You know, that triumvirate that wants to see the downfall of America as we know it. All those people play every single odd they can against every other single odd. But in the end, and particularly, I might add, given the impetus of the outflow of political refugees, for lack of a better term, from the blue states to the red states are getting redder. Yes, there's pockets of blue. For instance, Austin, Texas is blue, 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 and it's attracting blue people from all across the country. But Texas as a whole is red, and it's attracting lots of red folks from lots of blue states. The same with Florida, the same with Wyoming, the same to a lesser extent, just because of the locations, South Dakota and North Dakota, and Idaho. So you're seeing the division of ideology and political think, and who ascribes and who does not ascribe, who, in fact, in some cases, detests American values, and who subverts individual freedoms to the collective will. You can see it in the COVID stuff, which, by the way, is another thing, like the vaccine, meant to divide people. So the fissures, which have always existed in the American tapestry, still exist, and they are exacerbated, and they're being exacerbated quite intentionally. It won't happen in 2022. It may not happen 5 years from now, but I would predict that sometime in the next decade, maybe the next two decades, you could very well see a split in these United States into two or three countries, perhaps with part of Canada thrown into the mix, because the folks in Alberta are much like the rural folks in the Rocky Mountains of the United States, and the folks in the Yukon and the Northwest Territories likewise, and completely the opposite and very resentful of the big city folks in Quebec, let's say, in eastern Canada. I mean, it's a kind of a similar situation, although the Canadians have a different level of passion, shall we say, a different penchant for rebellion, much less than Americans do. Think about a country, this is looking way, way down the road, maybe, a country that would include much of the southeast states, Texas, perhaps Arizona, perhaps Nevada, most of the Rocky Mountain states, maybe the western half of Colorado, stretching up through the Dakotas, Idaho, Montana, and then Alberta, and then the Yukon and the Northwest Territories, all the way up and contiguous to Alaska. I mean, think of the resources of a country composed of that land area, with vast access to the sea, the Alaskan coast, the British Columbian coast, the Northwest Territories, you know, the Atlantic in the southeast, the Gulf of Mexico off of Florida and Texas. I mean, it's something to think about. So, no prediction for 2022, but the fires of separation, the fires of divorce, were lit at the inception of this country, at the ratification of the Constitution, and they have continued, at least in a major pattern, of rural versus urban, of agriculture versus industry, of country folks versus city folks, all the way through and up to now. And now it's those little flickers of flame have been fanned by a whole bunch of other divisions along race, gender, income, status, property, and other classes. It is something that perhaps our children will see. I don't know. And then I was asked to talk about what I think is going to happen with the vaccines. Boy, that's a big question, right? Just a few days ago, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments on a number of the mandate cases. Their ruling is going to be huge. I don't mean big, but I mean huge on a whole bunch of levels. I'm not going to talk about that in this show. We're going to wait and see how they rule and then discuss it. I'm hoping that they rule, even though they have supported the rights of local jurisdictions, businesses, and even states to impose mandates, that they will take that same tact, if you think about it, and say that the federal government, that while states and local can impose mandates if they wish, it's a state and local issue and the federal folks can't impose anything. That's my hope. I don't know. It's going to be rather fascinating to see. In the rat-a-tat-tat, I'm going to tell you about one really good court ruling we did have over the past week, and it involves the military, but we'll get there in just a bit. I do project, and it was actually a great question by about 9 or 10 listeners, I do project that you're going to see some massive lawsuits against companies that have mandated this vaccine and people have then succumbed or been crippled by the vaccine, even though the science is out there that this vaccine causes a lot of damage. Just look at the VAERS report, and which is far underreported. And I think that you're going to find some massive lawsuits against, finally, Big Pharma. You know, when you have immunity and you fraudulently, particularly when it comes to somebody's life, right? I mean, whether they live or die, and you fraudulently represent to them a product that has caused their death or their severe injury, immunity probably flies out the window. And when you have a product that is not a vaccine, which is what creates their immunity, in the 1986 Act, but rather a gene therapy drug, which their own studies call it. As I have said for many months, a clever group of lawyers is going to get together and there's going to be some monstrous class action suits against Big Pharma. And my feelings are, as more and more people are injured by these jabs, as more and more comes out about what Pfizer and Moderna and the NIH and all the rest of the that cabal of non-science greedy globalists, as more and more comes out over what they knew versus what they told you, particularly as to the problems with the jab, the fact that it did not confer immunity or protection from transmission to or from, I think you're going to see some monstrous lawsuits, and I think they're going to lose. We shall see over the course of the year. They are certainly beginning to gear up on the national level and on the world level. I've brought you those over the last few weeks. And my last projection for 2022 is really kind of an easy one. With the folks that are in power now, illegitimately in power, I think you're going to see more and more echo lawfare. Okay? I just made that term up. But for instance, let me tell you the headline, just the headline here, out of a November Wyoming Livestock Roundup paper. Scoping process begins. Well, you know what they're talking about? Let me give you the subline, the subheadline on this. Land Management Agency prioritizes sage-grouse policy changes. You see, they're going to use like the sage-grouse to slow down energy. They're going to use any ecological excuse, any ecological lever to sue, to delay, to hinder, and in their minds, to hopefully cease any and all energy exploration or other resource exploitation or extraction. I think you're going to see like a doubling of those types of lawsuits which interfere with industries and business, and by the way, which interfere with the supply side of the supply-demand equilibrium, which means, by the way, more inflation. Okay, a little bit about some new science and some new studies on top of all the other ones that I've brought you that are coming out over the inefficacy, the zero, in fact, in these studies, the negative efficacy of the jabs. And negative efficacy, to try and put this in perspective, is when the jabs don't protect you from COVID, they make you more likely to contract COVID. You know that pathogenic pathway that I talked about, and everybody laughed at me, more than a year ago? Well, this was an article by a guy by the name of Steve Kirsch, and he quotes a number of other studies and articles in it. Okay, there's now a study in Denmark, and it kind of went instantly viral. In the past, I've told you about the South African studies, the Israeli studies, the Brazilian studies, the UK studies, the Ontario, Canada studies, and on and on and on. And the Australian studies. And every single one of these is the same. Their percentages may vary a little bit, from 58 to 95% in terms of hospitalizations, and from 62 to 69% in terms of quote-unquote COVID deaths, unquote. But the underlying fact of those statistics, all of which are enormously weighted, far over 50%, is that those statistics apply to people who are hospitalized and died with COVID who were fully vaccinated. I'm using the vaccinated term because that's the term they're using. Should I say fully jabbed? Those are the facts that are coming from country after country after country, scientists after scientists after scientists, medical journals after medical journals after medical journals. It is what's going on, despite the propaganda being thrown your way about this being a pandemic of the unvaxxed. So this new study, this is out of Denmark. Let me give you the summary here. In terms of Omicron, or Omicron, everybody pronounces it differently, that variant, Pfizer customers are 76.5% more likely, and Moderna customers 39.3% more likely to be infected than folks who haven't gotten the jabs. That's kind of the summary. Okay, there's some great charts and such within this article, which is posted, by the way, in the COVID vaccine and family safety sections of the articles on the rightsideradio.com. What this shows is negative vaccine efficacy. What I talked about at the beginning of this segment. You are not only not protected from COVID, you are more likely to contract COVID, or at least the Omicron variant. And the variants coming thereafter is now another variant, which, you know, everybody's jumping up and down about. Okay. Ryan Cole, by the way, was one of the folks in this study, or who did this study. I brought you the UK study. There's another one out of there. Okay. And the study from UK and the study from Denmark, I mean, they're very similar. It pretty much shows that to maintain any type of protection from the vaccines. Now, I want you to listen to me very carefully. It's not that you're going to have the third jab or the fourth jab or the fifth jab, but that eventually you will get to the point where you need a jab every month or every 2 months. I mean, they have it all laid out scientifically. And of course, it's under huge attack by the left and the fraudulent Fauci crowd and the whole nine yards, right? The guy who writes this article and about all these various studies, Kirsch, I'm going to read you a quote from him. Quote, "My advice is simple. If you have been vaccinated, you need to stop now. Do not get the booster. As my friend Dr. Robert Malone, I had told you about him on the show and had quotes from him and audio from him, folks, over the last several weeks. As my friend Dr. Robert Malone is fond of repeating, there is an old adage, quote, when you find yourself in a hole, stop digging, unquote. Everyone needs to stop listening to the CDC now and start listening to people who have been saying to ditch the vaccines and aggressively promote early treatment with repurposed drugs. We could have, and still can, end the hospitalization and death with just one thing, early treatment, just like Japan has done. But the CDC has refused to listen. This is a pretty good summation of this article. And like I said, they have some great science charts in here. This is by a top-notch group of Scandinavian researchers in conjunction, I might add, with the Danish government. So heed what these people say. I mean, we are all Americans. We all get to make our choices, as I've said countless times. I'm not castigating any of you great listeners who took a jab or two jabs or three jabs, or even those of you, although I disagree, who are thinking about taking this fourth jab, which is suddenly materializing. But please get yourself informed. The science is out there. This is not the prattlings of Fauci on national TV, looking in the mirror at the other side of the camera and preening himself while he pockets money from his royalties on these quote-unquote vaccines and other drugs like remdesivir, which is more likely to kill you than save you if it's administered in a hospital for COVID. This is folks with no skin in the game. They don't make a dime less or a dime more, whether you believe their studies or you don't. But the studies are overwhelming. They are now from scores of areas and a score of countries. From across the globe, all different researchers, all arriving at the same conclusion. All right, you know, as they say, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. One of the things which I'm going to bring to you here in the future are the three most successful protocols for early treatment of COVID, which, by the way, is applicable to you if you have the vaccine, because these studies clearly show that you're more likely, not less likely, to get COVID, some variant strain of COVID, if you've been fully jabbed, than folks who have not been fully jabbed. So the protocols for early treatment are the same for the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. We're all in this pile of soup together. And the treatments, you can look them up in the meantime, is called the Fareed, that's F-A-R-E-E-D, the Lysenko, and you've heard, I've had his quotes on the show, and the Tyson protocol. T-Y-S-O-N. So please look those up and get prepared. You know, once again, a stitch in time saves nine. An ounce of prevention prevents pounds and pounds of cure. What you need to do is you need to prepare as if you are going to contract COVID, if you haven't already. Those of you who have contracted COVID, these studies overwhelmingly say that you are fairly well protected, much more protected than folks who've gotten the jab. But you need to prepare folks as if you're going to get sick. If you never get sick, terrific. And if you do get sick, you're ready to rock and roll, because one of the keys, and this has come out of, again, all these studies, is not waiting around. Next week, I'm going to bring you some information on what hospitals are getting paid for COVID patients. And they get big chunks of money at every step along the way. When you get admitted, when you get moved to intensive care, when you go on a ventilator. Oh, and yes, they even get a big chunk of money when you die. Wait till I go over these figures with you next week. The incentive is not to save your life. That doesn't mean that there's not great doctors and nurses who don't want to see people die, but their hands are bound by the rules of the hospital, and the hospital's hands are bound by the rules of the CDC and the NIH. And, you know, there is a money motivation factor at the hospital board level. It is not, I use this as a pun, it is not a prescription for robust health and happiness that we face. All right, I think the next thing that we're going to do, we're going to have a little bit more on this next week, particularly those protocols, and we're going to have a little bit more on this week over what's going on with the propaganda war out there, which finally the COVID fearmongers are beginning to lose, in my estimation. I mean, more and more people are waking up, more and more people are seeing the lies, more and more people are seeing the contradictions, more and more people are seeing the movement of the goalposts. More and more people are seeing people who promise to do X, Y, and Z doing exactly the opposite of X, Y, and Z. More and more people know, are associated with, or perhaps personally have experienced some type of adverse, in many cases material adverse effect related to the jabs. Even though the CDC, Big Pharma, and the Fauci fraud crew at the NIH are doing their best to tamp them down, along with a compliant and treasonous media, I might add. I think enough people are awakening now that the propaganda is being recognized just as it is. We shall see. Time does tell all tales. Into rat-a-tat-tat, and there's a pile of it today. Let's talk about BlackRock and Vanguard. Let's give you the foundation for what's going to be kind of an in-depth look at these two globalist and global and hugely, immensely powerful and shadowy outfits that work and walk in lockstep with the globalists, the Chinese, and the democratic Marxists, but for a profit motive. Everything they do is for profit, not for ideology. So a guy by the name of Lawrence D. Fink, he's the founder, he's the chairman and chief executive officer of BlackRock, and he and seven other partners founded BlackRock in 1988, and the firm has grown into a behemoth. Vanguard manages $7.9 trillion globally. BlackRock manages $9.5 trillion globally. Together, the two of them manage roughly $18 trillion in worth. I mean, think about that amount of money and that amount of investment power and that amount of financial coercive power. It's almost unimaginable. So the top 10 owners of BlackRock includes, yes, the Vanguard Group. You know, they have shares in each other. And BlackRock is based, by the way, in New York City. It was founded in 1988. Risk management, fixed income, institutional asset manager, that was its beginning purpose. Its asset base, $9.5 trillion, as I mentioned, has grown $1 trillion over the last year of the pandemic. That is unbelievable growth in a time when the world was teetering and on its tuchus, so to speak. Okay, who's the owner of Vanguard? It's a privately held company. The founder is a guy by the name of John C. Bogle. His headquarters is in Malvern, Pennsylvania. And you will be surprised when I disclose to you next week, or maybe you won't, as to who the major shareholders of Vanguard, who owns a huge block of stock in BlackRock, are. You'll never guess, or Maybe you will. You know, it's all one big, happy, globalist, democratic, Marxist, and Chinese cabal. I'll give you a hint. So, BlackRock, in 2021, saw a $1 trillion growth in its asset base, as we discussed here just a moment or two ago. Vanguard saw pretty close to the same. Vanguard, by the way, is one of the world's largest investment companies, and it owns a large selection of low-cost mutual funds, ETFs, advice, and related services. Neither is insured by the FDIC or any other outfit. Supposedly, they keep their investments at a level where investors, if, you know, the proverbial caca hit the fan, could at least get a dollar per share out of the companies. Well, maybe they can, maybe they can't. Actually, these companies are so large, their tentacles are in so many places, that the chances of loss in those companies is rather remote, particularly with the political power and the coercive power of $18 trillion, folks. I mean, that's more almost than the entire retirement accounts and pension funds and IRAs and KEOs and you name it, and 401ks of the entire population of the United States. I mean, does it kind of give you an idea of how monstrously big they are? Let me put this in another perspective for you. When combined, BlackRock, Vanguard, and another associated company of BlackRock and Vanguard called State Street are the single largest shareholder in at least 40% of all the listed companies, that is, the companies on a stock exchange in the United States. I want you to think about that for a moment. That is an immense amount of power, and it's an immense amount of power at the corporate level and on the boards and on the edicts and the actions of 40% of corporate America. And by corporate America, I mean if you're on a stock exchange, you are in this asset group. That's a little taste of who BlackRock and Vanguard are. We're going to get way, way, way down the BlackRock and Vanguard rabbit hole in the coming weeks. And you're not going to like what I've uncovered, and I'm still uncovering, I might add. Let's go to rat-a-tat-tat, because we have a pile and we haven't done a big rat-a-tat-tat in many weeks. Too much other stuff to cover. Let's go back to where the debt ceiling was raised, which it didn't have to be done, right? You don't have to pay off all your debt at once. You just have to make your debt payments. And we are covered 10 to 1 income to payments for debt. So this is just one more hood being pulled over your eyes. Anyway, McConnell, right, the Republicans, they came up with this grand scheme because they didn't want to support, you know, an increase in the debt ceiling. So instead, thinking they were very clever, they agreed with Chuck Schumer over on the Democratic side, who desperately wanted to raise the debt ceiling for a whole bunch of reasons. They agreed that they wouldn't vote for the debt ceiling. It would have to be voted on entirely by Democrats. But they would vote to remove the filibuster. Oh, okay. And the filibuster goes back to Harry Reid. We'll talk about him in just a moment. And this has backfired a little bit, as you're going to hear in the rat-a-tat-tat, because where Republicans, a generic Republican for Congress, was leading a generic Democrat for Congress by 10 points a few months ago, you know, people don't understand all these intricacies. All they know is that the debt ceiling got raised. That's not a good thing, and the Republicans didn't stop it. And as a result, the Republicans have lost, according to this one poll, their 10-point edge. We're going to talk about that in the rat-a-tat-tat. Harry Reid, let's digress just a moment. So he died back in December. This is the guy who, after the red wave of 2012, it was like 60 seats in the House, and Obama and the Democrats lost control of the House. Basically, Harry Reid, who was then the majority leader, he had a 3-vote majority in the Senate, but he was still 7 votes short of breaking the 60-vote Senate filibuster. So what he did was he employed what was called the nuclear option, which both parties had avoided employing for centuries because it changed the basic nature of the Senate. In fact, in 2003, Republicans discussed invoking the nuclear option, and they called it by the code word name The Hulk. Since, you know, like the superhero alter ego, it cannot be controlled once it's unleashed. And as history has shown, it can't be controlled. I mean, in the beginning, Reed opened this kind of Pandora's box, and he applied it just to executive branch appointees, such as cabinet secretaries and federal judges below the Supreme Court, like the United States Court of Appeals. But the genie, once it was out of the bottle, could not be put back in, which is why it had been avoided for 200 years. McConnell employed it, much to Chuck Schumer's dismay, to push through Supreme Court justices. I mean, that is how Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett, along with a drastic, fortunately for us, and beneficial to our view, our worldview, reshaping of the federal circuit courts, and the Democrats couldn't do anything to stop it. The Democrats have Harry Reid to thank. Now we're at the point where the Democrats are talking about stopping the filibuster entirely, okay? And if they do, they will deny the minority party, whoever that is in the future, the chance to even amend bills through a maneuver which is called up there on the Hill, filling the tree, and simply refusing to act on bills passed, let's say, by a GOP-led House if the GOP takes over the House. So this is a huge, huge problem that would change the shape of our republic, absolutely alter the state, the operations, and the mechanisms of the Senate. And this is something that Democrats sorely want to do. Harry Reid, by the way, was also involved in this huge scandal, which had to do with stopping a kind of central depository for nuclear waste from nuclear power plants that we had already spent $15 billion, we being you and I, the taxpayer, to develop and was well under construction. Well, he got together with folks in Utah, and he did a deal where, believe it or not, that involved Senator Mike Lee. He did a deal with a guy by the name of Huntsman, who at that time was the governor of Utah, and basically said, if you support me stopping all this nuclear waste in Nevada, I'll support you stopping XYZ in Utah. And stop it they did, to the cost of $15 billion of American taxpayer money, and relegating nuclear power plants in the future to store and contain their waste on site, which can lead to disastrous consequences if there's a problem at the plant, obviously. It's kind of interesting that Harry Reid was a Mormon. Mike Lee's family was Mormon. And the Huntsman family was Mormon. And they were all from the same LDS ward. By the way, I'm not casting aspersions at Mormons. I have some very good friends who are Mormons. I like Mormons. But this is how all these people knew each other, is through the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. In fact, believe it or not, Harry Reid was Mike Lee's family home teacher. So this is how it happened. Anyway, he was involved in the whole Bundy thing, you know, where people got killed, and he was trying to trade federal land for some private land, the private land being less valuable than the federal land because of certain resource deposits. And we know what a mess the whole Bundy thing came. Bundy was the guy, along with others, who was going to lose their cattle lease on the federal land that Harry Reid was trying to grab behind the scenes. And then Reid abused his authority to pressure the Department of Homeland Security to expedite a $115 million foreign investor visa deal, which just so happened to benefit his sons, who's a lawyer in Las Vegas, casino's client. His son's casino client. And then Reid actually made JW's corrupt politician list because he was embroiled in an influence peddling scandal involving a Chinese green energy client of a Nevada law firm, run by his son, Rory. I can go on and on here. I am bringing this to your attention because throughout this rat-a-tat-tat we're about to go over, oh my, corruption is rampant. Harry Reid was the king of corruption. He's probably what started this wave of insidious corruption we see at top government levels. Let's go to rat-a-tat-tat again. So Fauci has said publicly that the definition of who is and who isn't considered fully vaccinated wouldn't change unless there was new data. Well, you know, a couple weeks ago, he changed his mind. Quote, "It is a bit of semantics in that fully vaccinated for the purpose of the regulations and requirements that people have is to be what you are considered as being fully vaccinated. But there's no doubt that optimum vaccination is with a booster. I mean, there is no doubt about that." You'll see how that little rat-a-tat-tat plays into some of these others now. There's a nationwide chain, the fifth largest retailer in the world, who's begun to announce limits, you'll recognize this from 2020, on water and key items, that's a quote. By the way, this is the beginning of something bigger. I mean, I brought you my warnings in my three-part food series. Go back 3 or 4 weeks. If you haven't listened to it, please do, and get prepared. Because unlike the previous shortages we saw in 2020, folks, the underlying cause now is not a virus, it's not a government lockdown, and it's not something that's just going to go away in a matter of weeks. Okay, this time we're kind of looking at a supply chain hell. NPR, hardly a right-wing outfit, calls it industrial hell. The New York Times calls it a disaster. All this goes back to the manipulation of the supply-demand chain and the delivery chain by huge outfits with motives, shall we say, other than your comfort, full belly, and health. And by the way, this tyranny, which comes from the top, permeates down to the lower levels of progressives everywhere, across the globe. No vaccine, no negative test for a Christmas food assistance for homeless people. Think about that. So Biden's mandates, which are totally illegal, have forced some organizations who are ostensibly charitable organizations, like the Catholic Charities of Eastern Washington and their Christmas Bureau Food Assistance Department, they have denied needy families access to the food bank if they're not wearing a face mask have not been vaccinated. Seriously? Really? This is what they call, quote, an annual holiday assistance program, unquote. You may have heard over the last week that New York, I'll just boil this down without all the niceties. If you're white, you don't get the antibody treatment. That's being reserved for minorities and people of color. Your die of COVID, oh well, too bad. We have this in reserve for people who have been, quote, socially deprived in the past, unquote. All of these wrinkles and ripples, all of these what we consider to be insane positions by bureaucrats, progressive bureaucrats in the United States and around the world, all come and flow from their watching the corruption at the top of the heap. I mean, if you see a high-level official get away with something, then you think, so can I. What's good for them is good for me. The power that they're exercising and controlling, to exercise control over people, is the same power I can exercise to control people at my little level. Okay, in Austria, believe it or not, they are now putting out ads for Austrians who have to be 21 years old and vaccinated to hunt down, I'm not making this up, people who are not vaccinated. Huh. They've passed a law that employers in Austria are obliged to enforce fines on unvaccinated Austrians, basically turning regular citizens into inspectors, you know, to ensure vaccination compliance, and companies and businesses into fine collectors. There's a Swiss publication by the name of Blick, and they talk about an Austrian city of Linz, L-I-N-Z. It happens to have a below-average vaccination rate for Europe of 63%, and this city is actually advertising for inspectors to check on, quote, whether those who do not get vaccinated really pay for it, unquote, because you can get imprisoned now in Austria for up to a year, and you have to pay for your own incarceration plus a fine if you're not vaccinated. Wow. In just to show you how pervasive this is, over in Britain, okay, this poor mom, grieving mom, she loses her 4-year-old son to epilepsy. They are financially stricken from trying to take care of this kid for the 4 years that he lived. And they can't immediately afford a headstone for his grave. It takes him 3 years to save $4,500 for the design and the installation of a headstone, which happens to be in the shape of a big blue star being held by a teddy bear, with a really nice, really moving tribute to their dead son. Well, no, it's not that easy, because the Malvern, UK Town Council got an anonymous complaint about the shape and the color of the headstone. And what they responded with was to tell the stonemason who built the stone that these people really spent their last dollars on, that they saved 3 years to honor their son with, and installed on his birthday. They told the stonemason to remove it because, quote, "We have to have conformity of shapes in our lawn cemetery. We were contacted by people who objected to the shape. The longer it stayed up, the harder the process would have been. It was a very difficult decision to remove it, but one we had to make straight away," unquote. Wow. Think about that, folks. And you don't think that the folks who are jumping up and down, calling for bad things to happen to people who are not fully vaxxed, which is a moving goalpost every time Fauci opens his mouth, or vaccinated at all, you really think that can't happen here? Okay. Good luck on that. Iran. So Iran, just in the past week or so, has launched a rocket into space. Never mind ballistic missiles now. They launched a rocket into space, which was carrying, according to the Iranian state television, quote-unquote, research devices. And the launch, it drew condemnation, you know, the usual prattle, from a number of Western countries who said, oh, you're violating the UN Security Council resolutions. In the meantime, President Obama, in his third term, and his foil, President Qadhafi, is negotiating with Iran on the nuclear deal. Like, wow? Can you say wow? Okay. An Iranian spokesman, by the way, claimed that the rocket had launched the three research devices at an altitude of 470 kilometers, which is 290 miles, at a speed of 7,350 meters per second. I mean, here come the Iranians, folk. And if they can do that with that kind of missile into space, then reentry, guess what they can do to the United States with an EMP or something else? But in the meantime, we're sending them money, we're lifting the oil sanctions, and we're playing patty cakes with them in informal, quote-unquote, informal negotiations. Oh, that's just terrific. Oh, yes. Look, this is like poetic justice, okay? The DNC, the Democratic National Committee, guess what? All their workers are unionizing, which they've been trying to do since 2018, by the way. And they're unionizing, unfortunately, through the SEIU, which is an alt-left union. I mean, they have the symbol of the raised fist, the SEIU does. I brought you a whole story on them several years ago. And what this is going to mean is that the staff of the DNC, if possible, if that's even possible, is going to be even more left, okay? What's also good, though, is that it's going to cost the DNC way more money to operate, which is less money for campaigns. And the switch over to unionization in an election year is going to be a distraction. So that's the good news. In the long term, it's not good news at all. You may know that Twitter and Facebook have suspended the pages of Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's a Republican from Georgia, by the way, and she's a firebrand. Love her. And Greene is obviously really annoyed. She's moved all her activities to Rumble and Gab. I've told you about these outfits, folks. You need to get on them. And they are both free speech-friendly social networks. They are growing by leaps and bounds, like by hundreds of millions of people a year. And Green got to tell her side of the story since she was cut off at Facebook and Twitter. And basically, she was cut off. She was censored, okay? She was lopped off of the knees for her critical commentary on the vaccine adverse reaction system, VAERS, which we've talked about. And let me give you a quote. "This is beyond censorship of speech. I'm an elected member of Congress representing over 700,000 U.S. taxpaying citizens, and I represent their voices, values, defend their freedoms, and protect the Constitution," unquote. And you know what? She's exactly right. Let me give you another quick quote of hers. "But apparently they," the big tech folks, "think CDC managed a VAERS system on our own government websites are correct. They are nothing but misinformation. And to date, there's been zero investigation into reported COVID deaths from government-mandated COVID vaccines. So you can see why she was shut down. Judicial Watch, these guys are great, guys. Give them some money. I mean, they're warriors. Judicialwatch.org, send some money their way. They filed a Freedom of Information Act, and it's a lawsuit against the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and they want to see all the COVID-19 technical guidance that's provided to the Office of Refugee Resettlement. Basically, they want to know, what the hell are you doing down there in the border to check for COVID in refugees and illegal aliens coming across the border? So good for them. We'll see how much information they get and how long it takes to get. And tying in with immigration, there's a guy by the name of Lou Barletta. He's a Republican, Pennsylvania, and he's now running for governor. By the way, I think he's terrific. He's running against Tom Wolf, who is, you know, the progressives' like choir boy there in Pennsylvania, and who's intimately involved, along with the Secretary of State, in the massive election fraud which occurred in Pennsylvania. So Barletta has been doing some research, okay? Let me drop back. To put this in perspective, there was 173,000 encounters, according to the CBP, the Border Patrol reports, on the southern border in November. 173,620, which was a 5% increase compared to October, and 25% of those encounters involved individuals who had at least one prior encounter in the previous 12 months. There's a little background for you. Let's go back to Pennsylvania, because this all ties in, okay? Barletta has been doing some research, and he found that the Biden folks, you know, President Cadaver, and the planes that you pay for with your tax dollars, have been flying people out of the southern border into the Lehigh Valley, you know, a Republican stronghold, in eastern Pennsylvania. And that was after he caught them flying planes filled with border crosses into the Wilkes-Barre Scranton International Airport, another Republican area. So the charter flight company is called World Atlantic Airlines, okay? And they've been flying illegal aliens out of El Paso, Texas, to first this one location in Pennsylvania until they got caught, and then without saying a word, switched to a second location, which he also caught. Wow. Unbelievable. Let me give you a quote, and this is Barletta. First, we had discovered for ourselves that illegal immigrants were being shipped into northeast Pennsylvania on at least four flights. But then, when people demanded information, the flights were secretly shifted to the Lehigh Valley, and they just hoped no one would notice. While the Biden administration is playing games with the safety of Pennsylvania, Governor Tom Wolf and Attorney General Josh Shapiro are just throwing up their hands and saying it's not their problem, unquote. I talked a little bit about this next little item. I talked a little bit about this previously in this show, okay? The Republicans playing games. There's only one way the Republicans are going to lose the 2022 election. Number one, if you and I are not involved. And number two, if they blow it. So the Republicans have lost some of their momentum, according to one poll, just one poll. It's a USA Today Suffolk University poll. They're still favored to win back the House, but the poll showed that the unnamed Democrat on the ballot in this poll now slightly leads the unnamed Republican, 39% to 37%, with registered voters. And 24% of the respondents were undecided. Last November, folks, that's just 2 months ago, the Republican had an 8-point lead against the unnamed Democrat. Republicans led 46% to 38%, and only 16% of the respondents were undecided. This is ours to lose. You have to get involved. I have to get involved. We have to send the money, and we have to make our voices heard so that the Republicans don't blow it. Because the only way the Republicans can blow it is to play games like McConnell did in that one little thing I told you today about how he played games with the debt ceiling to try and make it look like the Democrats had voted for it, when really the Democrats voted for it only because he voted. The Republicans voted, he got the Republicans to vote to not institute the filibuster. That kind of crap has to be avoided, or we're going to blow really a golden and really a critical opportunity to save this country, okay? Save this country, for sure. All right, 83% of the vote went to a Manhattan DA, New Manhattan DA. He just happened to be funded for $1 million by George Soros. I've told you about Soros funding DAs and undermining the rule of law around the country. DAs that particularly don't like bail, that let people out immediately upon their arrest, etc., etc. Well, Alvin Bragg is the guy's name. And by the way, he just kind of let Cuomo off the hook. It's the same guy. And he got his money from Soros's Color of Change Political Action Committee. That was reported by the New York Post, by the way. And Soros is spending millions, by the way, in local prosecutor elections. And he backs left-wing radicals, obviously, against incumbent or moderate Democrats. And it just so happens that his involvement has coincided with this huge spike in crime, homicides, you name it, in many major cities around the United States, like San Francisco and like Baltimore. These are all Soros-installed DA stooges. By the way, the same in Chicago, which has seen almost a doubling of the incredibly horrible rates of crime and violence and homicides in that city under the so-called direction of the district attorney. January 6th, okay, that was just a few days ago. The Democrats tried to make big hay out of it. Cheney, God, I don't know, man, and she's from Wyoming. Cheney came out and had another spew about how Donald Trump can never be president again. It's just my eyes crossed just thinking about it. But how the insurrection, as they name it, is being taught at schools is quite interesting. So if you're in a red state, you're seeing one aspect of what happened at the Capitol a year ago, January 6th. If you're in blue states, gee, no big surprise, you're seeing another. There's a guy by the name of Justin Voldman. He's a history teacher. At a school in suburban Boston. Elizabeth Warren country. And he had his students journal all day long about what happened and discussed the, quote, fragility of democracy, unquote. He also said it was, quote, fair to draw parallels between January 6th and the rise of fascism under Adolf Hitler, unquote. I feel really strongly this needs to be talked about, he said. Oh, folks, this guy's teaching history? Okay. And January 6th was like the rise of Hitler? Okay, whatever. Then there's another teacher, Liz Wagner. She teaches 8th and 9th grade social studies in Des Moines, Iowa. It sure is in Boston. And she's upset because the school officials sent her a letter telling her, quote, to be careful how they reported the January 6th event. And basically, she went out and kind of taught it the way she wanted anyway. And for our last rat-a-tat-tat, since all of a sudden we are out of time, an upbeat note. Even though it's temporary, a federal judge has ruled in favor of the 35 Navy SEALs and 3 reservists who brought a lawsuit, once again through Liberty.org. I've told you about them, Matt Staver. Give them some money. They are warriors. And Judge Reed O'Connor, U.S. District Court Judge for the Northern District of Texas, he ruled that the coronavirus pandemic, quote, provides the government no license to abrogate, unquote, the First Amendment rights of America's servicemen and women. In fact, I'm going to read you part of this judge's decision because it will open your eyes as to what's going on. Quote, our nation asks the men and women in our military to serve, suffer, and sacrifice, but we do not ask them to lay aside their citizenry and to give up the very rights they have sworn to protect. The mandate treats comparable secular activity, such as medical exemptions, more favorably than religious activity. First, the Navy has granted only secular exemptions. It has never granted a religious exemption from the vaccine. Second, even if the Navy were to grant a religious exemption, that exemption would still receive less favorable treatment than its secular counterparts. Those who receive religious exemptions are medically disqualified. Those who receive medical exemptions are not. But the activity itself, foregoing the vaccine, is identical. Given the irrationality of the mandate, it is surprising that such litigants are entitled to relief. Let me keep going because it's really, it's an eye-opener. When he was describing the pathway to religious exemption, he described it as, quote, a 50-step process to adjudicate religious accommodation requests. Requests are essentially denied the moment they begin. The first 15 steps require an administrator to update a prepared disapproval template with the requester's name and rank. In essence, the plaintiff's requests are denied the moment they begin. That prepared letter is then sent to 7 offices for review. After those offices review the disapproval letter, the administrator packages the letter with other religious accommodation requests for final signature. The administrator then prepares an internal memo to Vice Admiral John Noel, asking him to sign letters disapproving immunization waiver requests based on sincerely held religious beliefs. Then at step 35 of the process, the administrator is told for the first time to read through the religious accommodation request. At that point, the disapproval letter has already been written. The religious accommodation request and related documents have already been reviewed by several offices. The disapproval has already been packaged with similar requests, and an internal memo has already been drafted requesting that Vice Admiral Noel disapprove the religious accommodation request. I mean, I want you to think about how we're treating our servicemen under President Kadaver and President Obama, third term. And then, of course, it's our government at work for us some more. This is how twisted, manipulative, behind the scenes and in the shadows these people are. The Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, you know, the same guys that haven't approved the jab yet, but say it's okay for five-year-olds. You know, absolutely, just stick them in the arm. Earlier this year, the FDA lifted restrictions on what's called mifepristone. And if I'm mispronouncing it, ladies or doctors, I apologize. I'm just a hayseed from Wyoming. But basically, it's an abortion pill that gals can use up to the 10th week of pregnancy. Okay, well, when the Texas law came out, when the Ohio law, when some of the other, we'll call right-to-life laws came out, and because the COVID pandemic, oh, gee, here we are again with the COVID thing, made it, quote, hard for many people to access doctors, the FDA dropped the requirement that the pills could only be handed over in person by doctors, and instead opened distribution of the pills to pharmacies who could also send the medication by mail. Now, I want you to think about this. This is the same FDA, folks, who says that ivermectin will kill you, and HCQ will kill you, and the pharmacy and the doctor can't give it to you. Okay. You got that kind of strange parallel, do you? So that about wraps it up, folks. Remember, look in the mirror, sit with your family, and at least once a day, repeat to yourself, I will muster, I will stand, I will not comply, I will never give in, I will never stop fighting, I will join with those in these United States and across the globe who love freedom as I do, and we will win. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Way more at you next week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.